Welcome to the Commitment to Excellence podcast. I'm Sean Quimby. I am your host. Thanks for joining me today. This podcast is about making a commitment to personal excellence, to be the best that you can be at anything and everything that you choose to do. Leadership, personal, professional development, health and fitness, family, relationships, you name it, we're going to talk about it. We're going to dive into it. This is episode 24 of the Commitment to Excellence podcast. This is a part two of the previous episode where we're talking about the book Extreme Ownership. You have not listened to episode one, so episode 23, but the first part of this book review, go back and listen to episode 23. It's the first three chapters and an intro to the book. It's a great book. It's on my must-read list. It's about leadership, specifically professional development, but really it's about more than that. But we'll talk about that when we get to the end and we wrap up. So just a reminder, anybody that shares this episode or the last episode tags me in it and uses a hashtag, a commitment to excellence, I'm going to put your name in a drawing, and I'm going to give away an autographed copy of the book. So again, this book is written by Jocko Willink and Lee Babin. Go back, listen to episode one of the two-part episode. And if you listened already, thanks for joining us again. All right, so we're going to dive into chapter four, which is called Check Your Ego. So moving ahead to the principal section of the book, here's what they have to say about this. Ego clouds and disrupts everything. The planning process, the ability to take good advice, the ability to accept constructive criticism, it can even stifle someone's sense of self-preservation. Often, the most difficult ego to deal with is your own. Everyone has an ego. Ego drives the most successful people in life, in the SEAL teams, in the military, in the business world. They want to win to be the best. That is good. But when ego clouds our judgment and prevents us from seeing the world as it is, then ego becomes destructive. When personal agendas become more important than the team and the overreaching mission success, performance suffers and the failure ensues. Many of the disruptive issues that arise within any team can be attributed directly to the problem with ego. Implementing extreme ownership requires checking your ego and operating with a high degree of humility. Admitting mistakes, taking ownership, and developing a plan to overcome challenges are integral parts of any successful team. Ego can prevent a leader from conducting an honest, realistic assessment of his or her own performance and the performance of the team. In the SEAL teams, we strive to be confident, but not cocky. We take tremendous pride in the history and the legacy of our organization. We are confident in our skills and are eager to take on challenging missions that others cannot or even aren't willing to execute. But we can't ever think that we're too good to fail or that our enemies are not capable, deadly, and eager to exploit our weaknesses. We must never get complacent. This is where controlling the ego is most important. We talked a little bit about ego earlier on in the podcast and how it gets in the way, right? It clouds our judgment. It's a defense mechanism that is, well, it's normal, right? It's human nature to some degree to want to protect ourselves. They talk in the chapter four about throwing that to the wayside and not being the guy or gal that looks at something, a situation, a mistake, and tries to point fingers. It's human nature to do that. But it's not leadership, right? You're kind of throwing other people under the bus when you do that. So here's an example from business that they give, where they're talking about ego and how it gets in the way. So Gary's a mid-level manager in a company that they're doing some consulting with. So we're just jumping in here. How you doing, Gary? I asked when he picked up the phone. Not good, Gary responded. We just had a major issue at one of our critical projects. What happened? I asked. I couldn't hope to match Gary's expertise in the industry, but I could help him solve his leadership challenges, improve communications, and run a more effective team. Our drilling superintendent made a call on his own to swap out a critical piece of equipment, said Gary. He totally violated our standard operating procedures. I have told him before how I wanted this done, and he completely blew me off. Gary was angry. Obviously, Gary's ego had been bruised by the fact that the drilling superintendent hadn't cleared the decision through him. This was something he knew he should have run through me, Gary continued, and he blatantly did not. He made the wrong call and set our completion date back several days, costing our company serious capital. In this industry, each day lost on a project could cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. Tell me about your superintendent, I said. Why do you think he would do that? No idea, said Gary. He knows he has to run that call through me, but he's been in this business way longer than I have, and he's got a ton of experience. Sometimes he looks at me and his face says, what the hell do you know? I'm sure he thinks he knows better than me. Perhaps he was just pushing the envelope to see what he could get away with, I replied. Which can escalate if you let it go. That's part of the problem. I'm worried about how he will respond to my critique, said Gary. With his years of knowledge and expertise, he's a critical member of this team. We can't afford to lose him. If I call him out, he's going to blow up at me, and the friction between us is likely to get even worse than it already is. And you know the climate in this industry. With his experience, he can find another job tomorrow if he wants. That means you will have to check your ego in order to have a constructive discussion with him and get this under control, I responded. Let's think this through, I continued. Do you think he deliberately tried to shut down the drilling operations and cost the company money? No, admitted Gary. I'm sure he thought he was doing what was best for the immediate situation as it presented itself. At the tactical level, on the front lines, where the guys in the field execute the mission, I said, it's critical that the troops grasp how what they do connects to the bigger picture. Your superintendent may not have really understood how this failure to follow procedures and get approval for these changes would result in hundreds of thousands of dollars lost. Do you think that's possible? Definitely. He has exceptional hands-on knowledge of drilling, but he doesn't really deal with the big picture, Gary replied. His anger subsided and his bruised ego diminished as he realized the superintendent had probably not been willfully insubordinate. He now began to understand the reasons the superintendent made the decisions he did. As a leader, it's up to you to explain the bigger picture to him and to all your frontline leaders. That's a critical component of leadership, I replied. But Gary was still concerned about how to deal with his drilling superintendent and the superintendent's ego. How can I communicate this to him without ruffling his feathers and getting him all pissed off at me? Asked Gary. If I confront him about this, our communication will get even worse than it already is. That's another critical component of leadership, I quickly replied. Dealing with people's egos, and you can do so by using one of the main principles we've taught you during the course, extreme ownership, Gary responded. Ownership of what? He's the one that screwed this up, not me. It was clear Gary's ego was getting in the way of the solution to the problem. Ownership of everything, I answered. This isn't his fault, it's yours. You are in charge, so the fact he didn't follow procedures is your fault. And you have to believe that because it's true. When you talk to him, you need to start the conversation like this. Our team made a mistake, and it's my fault. It's my fault because I obviously wasn't clear as I should have been in the explaining why we have these procedures in place and how not following them can cost the company hundreds of thousands of dollars. You're an extremely skilled and knowledgeable superintendent. You know more about this business than I ever will. It was up to me to make sure you knew the parameters we have to work within and why some decisions have got to be run through me. Now I need to fix this so it doesn't happen again. Do you think that will work? Asked Gary, sounding unconvinced. I'm confident it will, I replied. If you approached it as he did something wrong and he needs to fix something and he is at fault, it becomes a clash of egos. and you two will be at odds. That's human nature. But if you put your own ego in check, meaning you take the blame, that will allow him to actually see the problem without his vision clouded by ego. Then you can both make sure that your team's standard operating procedures, when to communicate, what is and isn't within his decision-making authority, are clearly understood. I wouldn't have thought to take that track, Gary admitted. It's counterintuitive, I said. It's natural for anyone in a leadership position to blame subordinate leaders and direct reports when something goes wrong. Our egos don't like to take the blame, but it's on us as leaders to see where we failed to communicate effectively and help our troops clearly understand what their roles and responsibilities are and how their actions impact the bigger strategic picture. Remember, it's not about you, I continued. It's about the drilling superintendent. It's about the mission and how best to accomplish it. With that attitude exemplified in your key leaders, your team will dominate. And that's really, I mean, it's less about ego and more about extreme ownership, right? Like just taking ownership of everything that's within your purview. But I think about the ego piece of that, it's really tough, like, to take ownership of situations. And when you can do that, you take the heat off of other people, which can be, you know, that can be really important. And it's an important tool to, get in and work with people when they're not feeling blame, when they're not feeling targeted, when they're not feeling like you're coming down on them. It's much easier for them to understand the point that you're trying to make, to take the teaching and feedback that you're trying to give them. You know, it's hard. It's not perfect. You can't do it all the time. But you can do it, if you're deliberate about it, you can do it more than most people do. And I think create an effective work environment for folks to thrive and grow in. And that's what it's all about, right? We want people to grow. We want people to learn from their mistakes. We want people to get better. It's hard to do that when people are feeling thrown under the bus, targeted, that kind of thing. When people feel like you're supporting them and trying to lift them up and you're taking ownership of mistakes or problems or struggles, that's a pretty powerful place for them to be, learn and grow. And that's what it's all about, right? Like, I want the people that I'm leading to grow and learn. I need somebody. I want somebody to be there, to be ready. If I get hit by a bus tomorrow, I haven't done my job if there's not somebody there to kind of pick up the pieces and run, at least for a little while anyway. So chapter 5 is called Cover and Move. And, you know, that what's cover and move? That's really a military term, right? You see in the movies and in practical application when military teams are moving, components of the team will stay in place, cover the other part of the team when they move. The other part moves, they get set up, they provide cover for the rest of the team as they move back into position. They're sort of leapfrogging one another, working together to go methodically from A to B so that the team always has coverage. They're safer that way. They're more effective that way. They're more powerful that way. They can almost sort of multiply their impact by doing that. So here's the from the principal section of this book. Cover and move is the most fundamental tactic, perhaps the only tactic. Put simply, cover and move means teamwork. Elements within the greater team are crucial and must work together to accomplish the mission, mutually supporting one another from that singular purpose. Departments and groups within the team must break down silos, depend on each other, and understand who depends on them. If they forsake this principle and operate independently or work against each other, the results can be catastrophic to the overall team's performance. With any team, there are divisions that arise. Often when smaller teams within the team get so focused on their immediate tasks, they forget about what others are doing or how they depend on other teams. They may start to compete with one another. And when there are obstacles, animosity and blame develops. This creates friction that inhibits the overall team's performance. It falls on leaders to continually keep perspective on the strategic mission and remind the team that they are part of the greater team and the strategic mission is paramount. Each member of the team is critical to success, though the main effort and supporting efforts must be clearly identified. If the overall team fails, everyone fails. Even if a specific member or an element within the team did their job successfully, pointing fingers and placing blame on others contributes to further dissension between teams and individuals. These individuals and teams must instead find a way to work together, communicate with each other, and mutually support one another. The focus must always be on how to best accomplish the mission. Alternatively, when the team succeeds, everyone within the supporting that team succeeds. Every individual and every team within the larger team gets to share in the success. Accomplishing the strategic mission is the highest priority. Team members, departments, and supporting assets must always cover a move, help each other, work together, support each other to win. This principle is integral for any team to achieve victory. Teamwork, cover a move, we're working together, we're a team, we're all on the same page, we're all moving in the same direction for the same goal. And this is important, you know, that's why people need to know why. People need to know what the big picture looks like. That's a mistake that I made early in my career. I didn't think anybody needed to know what the big picture was, except for me, I guess. And I didn't want to waste any time talking about those sorts of things and team meetings and staff meetings. I just was like, of the mindset that you just need to do your job. I'll do mine. You do yours. We're good. Well, that's not when people don't know what the direction that we're going, where we're trying to get to, what's our shared vision, and they don't have any investment in it. It's hard to work together as a team. People don't want to do that. People want to know, you know, what's our mission? Where are we going? What are we doing? And then you can get some buy-in to get everybody working in the same direction. Sure, everybody's got their own role. Everybody has a different part to play, but they all work together to achieve a common goal. And it's just teamwork's incredibly important. You cannot function as a unit. You know, if you're working by yourself, so be it. You can kind of do what you want. But if you got 20, 30, 50, 100 people working together in the same direction, it's important to be on the same page to some degree and understand how the parts go together and that this piece supports that piece and that piece supports this piece and everything works together to achieve a common outcome, a greater good, a goal, right? Really important. Chapter 6 is called Simple. So we're keeping it simple. Let's not overcomplicate things. So the principle section of Chapter 6. Combat, like anything in life, has inherent layers of complexities. Simplifying as much as possible is crucial to success. When plans and orders are too complicated, people may not understand them. And when things go wrong, they inevitably do go wrong, complexity compounds issues that can spiral out of control into total disaster. Plans and orders must be communicated in a manner that is simple, clear, and concise. Everyone that is part of the mission must know and understand his or her role in the mission and what to do in the event of likely contingencies. As a leader, it doesn't matter how well you feel you have presented the information or communicated an order, plan, tactic, or strategy. If your team doesn't get it, you have not kept things simple and you have failed. You must brief to ensure the lowest common denominator on the team understands. It is critical as well that the operating relationship facilitate the ability of the frontline troops to ask questions that clarify when they do not understand the mission or key tasks to be performed. Leaders must encourage this communication and take the time to explain so that every member on the team understands. Simple. This principle isn't limited to the battlefield. In the business world and life, there are inherent complexities. It is critical to keep plans and communication simple. Following this rule is crucial to the success of any team, any combat, business, or life. So keep it simple. Don't overcomplicate it. I'm not going to read it, but the next section's application to business, and it goes on to talk about a situation where a team in a workplace was trying to increase their productivity, and they implemented a bonus plan that they felt like was really going to increase productivity and lead to production outcomes and just really kind of ramping up production because they thought they had this amazing bonus structure. And maybe it was, but nobody on the team could explain it. Nobody understood it. They didn't know why 1 week their paycheck was bigger than the other. It was just way too complex. So they ended up changing the bonus structure and made it really clear, like everybody knew, okay, this is what we need to do to hit the bonus structure. And then everybody started knocking it out of the park once they simplified it so that everybody understood it. And the people that had put the bonus structure together thought it was really crafty and really great and really highly incentivizing for high-level production. And, you know, maybe if you had the time to sit around and break it down and analyze it, maybe it was. But for the people that were doing the job, cranking out widgets or whatever it was, right, they didn't get it and they didn't know. So the incentive to do more, to work harder, to be more efficient was gone because they had no idea what led to the increases in pay. So keeping it simple, don't overcomplicate things. Don't make a problem where there isn't one. I run into this all the time in my field where, you know, there's so many rules and regulations. And, you know, with all due respect to the people who implement the rules and regulations, most of them were created by people who've never done the work that we do. They don't understand the complexities and they don't really care. Sometimes I think they just sort of really entertain themselves by coming up with these really advanced rule-making procedures and reporting procedures and just red tape. And I get it. Like, you have to have some checks and balances and red tape, but things just get overcomplicated. And I sit in meetings all the time where, you know, in the work that I do, I've been doing on some level for well over 25 years now. And sometimes I don't get it. Sometimes I don't understand it. It does not make sense to me. We're doing things just to do them. You know, how's the Janie Jansen that's worked for us for 3 months and, you know, doesn't have a college diploma or a master's degree, not that those things matter necessarily, but how are they supposed to understand it if I can't understand it? It's just, it's really complex and sometimes it's needless. But, you know, for me, I don't get to make the rules. Sometimes I get to influence them a little bit, but I don't get to make them. So what I need to do is work really hard to make things as simple as possible for people and just set up an environment where everybody can be persistently consistent and have things be as smooth as possible and take the time to explain to people as best as I can a system that I don't always understand. Right? It's hard, but it's really important. They're not going to be the staff that work for me, with the clients that we serve. They're not going to understand if it's too complex. So we have to work really hard. And we need to be, like, there's a piece in there about questions, right? Like, that used to drive me crazy when people would ask questions, especially if I thought the answer was obvious. If somebody is asking a question about something that you think the answer is obvious, it might not be as obvious as you think it is, at least not for that person. And don't you want all your team members on the same page if you can get them there? Hard to have 20, 30, 100 people on the same page, but if you can get them there, don't you want them there? And if answering a simple question will do it, it's probably a good use of your time and resources. All right, the next chapter is prioritize and execute. I think this pretty straightforward, but let's see what they have to say in the principle section. On the battlefield, countless problems compound in a snowball effect. every challenge, complex in its own right, each demanding attention. But a leader must remain calm and make the best decisions possible. To do this, SEAL combat leaders utilize prioritize and execute. We verbalize this principle with this direction: relax, look around, make a call. Even the most competent of leaders can be overwhelmed if they try to tackle multiple problems or a number of tasks simultaneously. The team will likely fail at each of these tasks. Instead, leaders must determine the highest priority task and execute. When overwhelmed, fall back upon this principle: prioritize and execute. Multiple problems and high-pressure, high-stakes environments are not exclusive to combat. They occur in many facets of life, and particularly in business. Business decisions may lack the immediacy of life and death, but the pressures on business leaders are still intense. The success or failure of the team, the department, the company, the financial capital of investors, careers, and livelihoods are at stake. These pressures produce stress and demand decisions that often require rapid execution, such as decision-making for leaders, can be overwhelming. A particularly effective means to help prioritize and execute under pressure is to stay at least a step or two ahead of real-time problems. Through careful contingency planning, a leader can anticipate likely challenges that could arise during the execution and map out an effective response to those challenges before they happen. That leader and his or her team are far more likely to win. Staying ahead of the curve prevents a leader from being overwhelmed when pressure is applied and enables greater decisiveness. If the team has been briefed and understands what actions to take through such likely contingencies, the team can then rapidly execute. When those problems arise, even without specific direction from leaders. This is a critical characteristic of any high-performance winning team in any business or industry. It also enables effective decentralized command. When confronted with the enormity of operational plans and the intricate micro-iteration within those plans, it becomes easy to get lost in the details, to become sidetracked or lose focus on the bigger effort. It is crucial to, particularly for leaders at the top of an organization, to pull themselves off the firing line. Step back and maintain the strategic picture. This is essential to help correctly prioritize for the team. With this perspective, it becomes far easier to determine the highest priority effort and focus all energies toward its execution. Then, senior leaders must help subordinate team leaders within their team prioritize their efforts. Just as in combat, priorities can rapidly shift and change. When this happens, communication of that shift to the rest of the team, both up and down the chain of command, is critical. Teams must be careful to avoid target fixation on a single issue. They cannot fail to recognize when the highest priority task shifts to something else. The team must maintain the ability to quickly reprioritize efforts and rapidly adapt to a constantly changing battlefield. To implement, prioritize, and execute in any business, team, or organization, a leader must evaluate the highest priority problem. Lay out in simple, clear, and concise terms the highest priority effort for your team. Develop and determine a solution. Seek input from key leaders and from the team when possible. Direct the execution of that solution, focusing all efforts and resources toward this priority task. Move on to the next highest priority problem. Repeat. When priorities shift within the team, pass situational awareness both up and down the chain. Don't let the focus on one priority cause target fixation. Maintain the ability to see other problems developing and rapidly shift as needed. So it's pretty straightforward. Take a step back, assess what the priorities are, what are your most immediate concerns, especially when things get overwhelming, problematic. Take a look, pick your biggest problem and attack it, and then move on to the next, and so on, and so on. use your team, work together, solve the problem. It's a good strategy. All right, next chapter. Decentralized command. Clearly another military term, decentralized command. What does that mean in application for us? So here's the principle section in this chapter. Human beings are generally not capable of managing more than 6 to 10 people, particularly when things go sideways and inevitable contingencies arise. No one senior leader can be expected to manage dozens of individuals, much less hundreds. Teams must be broken down into manageable elements of 4 to 5 operators with a clearly designated leader. Those leaders must understand the overall mission and the ultimate goal of that mission. The commander's intent. Junior leaders must be empowered to make decisions on key tasks necessary to accomplish that mission within the most effective and efficient manner possible. Teams within teams are organized for maximum effectiveness for a particular mission, with leaders who have clearly delineated responsibilities. Every tactical level team leader must understand not just what to do, but what they are why they are doing it. If frontline leaders do not understand why, they must ask their bosses to clarify why. This ties very closely with Believe in Chapter 3. A decentralized command does not mean junior leaders or team members operate their own programs that results in chaos. Instead, junior leaders must fully understand what is within their decision-making authority, the left and the right limits of their responsibility. Additionally, they must communicate with senior leaders to recommend decisions outside of their authority and pass critical information up the chain so senior leadership can make informed strategic decisions. SEAL leaders on the battlefield are expected to figure out what needs to be done and do it. To tell higher authority what they plan to do rather than ask, "What do you want me to do?" Junior leaders must be proactive rather than reactive. Now, sidebar here. This all requires a good, strong leader without lots of ego problems that has done a good job of informing his leadership team. I'm going to skip the rest of it just for the interest of time, but you get the idea that it's about, if everybody does a good job, if leadership does a good job, people can lead down the chain of command. They don't need to run everything up the chain of command, because as a leader, I've done a good job of teaching and mentoring and coaching the folks that I lead, the folks that I supervise, so that they don't have to ask me for every single decision. And that, you know, there's a learning curve there, right? Like some on day one, somebody's brand new. They probably need a little more guidance, but you know, some of the team that I'm currently leading has been in their positions for like over 5 years. So I don't need or want them to run every decision by me. They know what they're doing. They know what I'm going to say to do. And they know that if they have a question, they can reach out to me. That's good. And I have to catch myself, because every once in a while, there are times when people don't run stuff by me. I'm like, why didn't you run that by me? And then I have to take a step back and take a deep breath and say, they didn't need to. They got it right. And even if they didn't do what I would have told them to do, what they did was fine, right? Like, that's all ego stuff. That's all me. I have to check that and reflect on it and not make it about them. I have to make it about me. All right, next chapter is about planning. And here's what they say about planning. This is a leader's checklist for planning. So planning is pretty straightforward, right? We gotta have a plan for what we do. We need to not just kind of wildly do things like I've talked about before. I get up every day and I write out a list of the stuff that I'm going to do. That's my plan for the day. So here's what they say about planning. Analyze the mission. Understand higher headquarters mission. Commander's intent. What's the end state? What's the goal? Identify and state your own commander's intent and end state for the specific mission. Identify personnel, assets, resources, and time available. Decentralize the planning process. Empower key leaders within the team to analyze possible courses of action. Determine a specific course of action. Lean towards selecting the simplest course of action. Focus efforts on the best course of action. Empower key leaders to develop the plan for the selective course of action. Plan for likely contingencies through each phase of the operation. So what could go wrong? Let's have a plan for some of those things. Then mitigate the risks that can be controlled as much as possible. Delegate portions of the plan and brief to key junior leaders. Stand back and be a tactical genius. Continually check and question the plan against emerging information to ensure it still fits the situation. Brief the plan to all participants and supporting assets. Emphasize the commander's intent. That's the why. What are we doing? What's our goal? Ask questions and engage in discussion and interaction with the team to ensure they understand. Conduct post-operational debrief after execution. Analyze lessons learned and implement them in future planning. So that's a pretty formal planning process. I think you can take from that and maybe demilitarize the language there a bit so that it's a little less stuffy. But the idea is make a plan that's informed, disseminate the information to the people that need it, get feedback from the process. This is how deliberate practice works, right? Make adjustments as needed and achieve the goal as required, directed, what have you. So the last chapter is called Discipline Equals Freedom. The culminating principle of the book, I would argue. So here's the principle. I'm going to read, this one's a little longer, but I'm going to read the whole thing because I think it's important. Every leader must walk a fine line. That's what makes leadership so challenging. Just as discipline and freedom are opposing forces that must be balanced, leadership requires finding the equilibrium in the dichotomy of many seemingly contradictory qualities between one extreme and another. The simple recognition of this is one of the most powerful tools a leader has. With this in mind, a leader can more easily balance the opposing forces and lead with maximum effectiveness. A leader must lead, but also be ready to follow. Sometimes another member of the team, perhaps a subordinate or direct report, might be in a better position to develop a plan, make a decision, or lead through a specific situation. Perhaps the junior person has greater expertise in a particular area or more experience. Perhaps he or she simply thought of a better way to accomplish the mission. Good leaders must welcome this, putting aside ego and personal agendas to ensure that the team has the greatest chance of accomplishing its strategic goals. A leader must be aggressive, but not overbearing. SEALs are known for their eagerness to take on tough challenges, accomplish some of the most difficult missions. Some may even accuse me of hyper-aggression, but I did my utmost to ensure that everyone below me in the chain of command felt comfortable approaching me with concerns, ideas, thoughts, even disagreements. If they felt something was wrong or thought there was a better way to execute, if I encouraged them, regardless of rank, to come to me with questions and present an opposing view, I listened to them, discussed new options, and came to a conclusion with them, often adapting some part or perhaps even all of their idea if it made sense. If it didn't make sense, we discussed why, and we each walked away with a better understanding of what we were trying to do. That being said, my subordinates also knew that if they wanted to complain about the hard work and relentless push to accomplish the mission I expected of them, they best take those thoughts elsewhere. A leader must be calm, but not robotic. It is normal and necessary to show emotion. The team must understand that their leader cares about them and their well-being. But a leader must control his or her emotions. If not, how can they expect to control anything else? Leaders who lose their temper also lose respect. But at the same time, to never show any sense of anger, sadness, or frustration would make that leader appear void of any emotion at all, a robot. People do not follow robots. Of course, a leader must be confident but never cocky. Confidence is contagious, a great attribute for a leader and a team. But when it goes too far, overconfidence causes complacency and arrogance, which ultimately set the team up for failure. A leader must be brave but not foolhardy. He or she must be willing to accept risk and act courageously, but must never be reckless. It is a leader's job to always mitigate as much as possible those risks that can be controlled to accomplish the mission without sacrificing the team or excessively expending critical resources. Leaders must have a competitive spirit, but also be gracious losers. They must drive competition and push themselves to their teams to perform at the highest level. But they must never put their own drive for personal success ahead of overall mission success for the greater team. Leaders must act with professionalism and recognize others for their contributions. A leader must be attentive to details, but not obsessed by them. A good leader does not get bogged down in the minutiae of a tactical problem at the expense of strategic success. He or she must monitor and check the team's progress in the most critical tasks, but that leader cannot get sucked into the details and lose track of the big picture. A leader must be strong, but likewise have endurance, not only physically but mentally. He or she must maintain the ability to perform at the highest level and sustain that level for the long term. Leaders must recognize limitations and know to pace themselves and their teams so that they can maintain a solid performance indefinitely. Leaders must be humble, but not passive, quiet, but not silent. They must possess humility and the ability to control their ego and listen to others. They must admit mistakes and failures, take ownership of them, and figure out a way to prevent them from happening again. But a leader must be able to speak up when it matters. They must be able to stand up for the team and respectfully push back against the decision, order, or a directive that can negatively impact overall mission success. A leader must be close with subordinates, but not too close. The best leaders understand the motivations of their team members and know their people, their lives, their families. But a leader must never grow so close to subordinates that one member of the team becomes more important than another, or more important than the mission itself. Leaders must never get so close that a team forgets who's in charge. A leader must exercise extreme ownership. Simultaneously, that leader must employ decentralized command by giving control to subordinate leaders. Finally, a leader has nothing to prove but everything to prove. By virtue of rank and position, the team understands that the leader is in charge. A good leader does not gloat or revel in his or her position. To take charge of minute details just to demonstrate and reinforce to the team a leader's authority is the mark of a poor, inexperienced leadership lacking in confidence. Since the team understands that the leader is de facto in charge, in that respect, a leader has nothing to prove. But in another respect, a leader has everything to prove. Every member of the team must develop the trust and confidence that their leader will exercise good judgment, remain calm, and make the right decisions when it matters most. Leaders must earn that respect and prove themselves worthy, demonstrating through action that they will take care of the team and look out for their long-term interests and well-being. In that respect, a leader has everything to prove every day. Beyond this, there are countless other leadership dichotomies that must be carefully balanced. Generally, when a leader struggles, the root cause behind the problem is that the leader has leaned too far in one direction and steered off course. Awareness of the dichotomies in leadership allows this discovery and thereby enables the correction. So here I outline some of the dichotomy of leadership, which, interestingly enough, is the next book that they write after this one. So The dichotomy of leadership. A good leader must be confident but not cocky, courageous but not foolhardy, competitive but a gracious loser, attentive to details but not obsessed by them, strong but have endurance, a leader and a follower, humble not passive, aggressive not overbearing, quiet not silent, calm but not robotic, logical but not devoid of emotions, close with the troops, but not so close that one becomes more important than another, or more important than the good of the team. Not so close that they forget who's in charge. Able to execute extreme ownership while exercising decentralized command. A good leader has nothing to prove, but everything to prove. And then this chapter being about discipline equals freedom is all about the notion that the more disciplined you are, the more freedom you have to not be disciplined, ironically, every once in a while, right? And that most certainly applies to your professional life, your personal life, right? The guy or gal who eats a dialed-in diet 90% of the time can eat whatever the heck they want 10% of the time. The guy who leads well, who inspires, who answers questions, who helps people grow, who removes the ego and takes the blame, right, has got a lot of freedom there, a lot of wiggle room, builds a lot of trust with his team members, and has a lot of trust from any superiors they might have, board of directors, that kind of thing, right? And, you know, like, this is really hard. It is hard to be a great leader. It is not something that just happens by accident. I will say that I spent the first big chunk of my career thinking you either just were a good leader or you weren't, and people just followed you because you were a leader. We talked about this a lot when I talked about the five levels of leadership. Leadership's a skill. I mean, sure, just like anything else, there are personality characteristics that sort of predispose somebody to be a better or less effective leader. But being a good leader is a skill that can be honed. And, you know, let's be clear, I'm not necessarily waving the flag and saying, look at me, look at me, look at me, I'm a great leader. Here's what I know. I'm a better leader than I was 5 years ago. I'm an exponentially better leader than I was 10 years ago. I'm worlds away from where I was 15 years ago. But I'm not as good as I'm going to be 5 years from now. And that's about that commitment to excellence. That's about deliberate practice and how I'm trying to take extreme ownership in my life in any and every aspect of my life. I want to be a better leader. I want to be a better father. I want to be a better husband. I want to be a better friend. I want to be the best that I can be. I'm driven. I'm never going to stop. Reading books like this helps me reflect, helps me maintain focus. So I love to read. But you can't, I've said this before, I will say it again, you cannot just pick up a good book, a book that's just full of inspirational words and wisdom. Read it one time, throw it on the shelf and check that box. Yeah, I read that book. It was a good book and I'm smarter now for reading it. Maybe you are a little bit. But if you don't keep coming back to it, if you don't deliberately incorporate concepts, strategies, tactics, whatever you want to call them, if you don't deliberately incorporate them into your life, you're not going to get better. It's not how it works. So I highly encourage you to read this book. I gave it a very quick overview, two parts here, like less than 2 hours when it's all said and done. It's a great book. It came at a time in my life when I needed it. Rereading it again to do this podcast and just going through it again reinforced some things and got me thinking about things again and reflecting. And, you know, I'm reading Jocko and Leaf talk about situations and ideas. I'm like, yeah, I do that. I don't do that. I need to be better about this, right? Like, that's how you grow. You get better at things. You dig into stuff. You kick it around a little bit. You play with it, and then you put it into practice. If you don't, you won't get better. And that's, you know, if you don't want to get better, that's fine. I want to. I want you to. I'm never going to stop until they put me in the ground. Then maybe I'll stop then. But between now and then, I'm on the path. I hope you are too. I appreciate you listening. I thank you for reviews and shares and all of that stuff, feedback to support. It's great. I'm trying really hard to keep this momentum going, and I'm engaging in deliberate practice here, and I hope you do too. Again, you know, this episode, last episode specifically, if you share this episode on your social media, particularly Instagram, Facebook, those are what I do. Tag either, you know, me, Sean Quimby, or a commitment to excellence in it, and then just throw the hashtag commitment to excellence in there. I'm going to put the names of folks in a hat here. I'm going to give it like 3 or 4 weeks for time for people to share the show. And once we get to 3 or 4 weeks, I'm just going to throw all the names in a hat. I'm going to pull one out, or, you know, have somebody pull one out. And I'll reach out to you, and I will send you an autographed copy. I have a couple copies autographed by Jocko and Leaf. I'm going to give one away as a thank you to somebody for sharing the show. That's how this stuff grows organically. You know, I'm looking to keep doing some things. I'm really looking to start doing some interviews. I actually had somebody reach out to me today about doing one. So I'm going to start reaching out to people, try to get some guests on. That'll be a great way to get a little bit of organic growth. That's my plan. I'm due for we're in a new month, so it's time for me to review my goals and, you know, look at the things that I'm doing well at and the things I'm not doing well at. So that will probably be the next episode that comes out, but we will see. So share the show, give me a rating and review on whatever platform you're listening to. I appreciate you taking the time very much. And as always, if you are still here, I appreciate you. Thanks very much. I hope you are in the process of making today a great day. Thanks.